Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan, here as always in Brooklyn with producer Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hi, J.L. How you doing? Hi, everybody out there. How you feeling?
Good. You almost started like you were one of the Canadians in South Park.
Hi.
J.L. How are you?
Eventually, it all starts to blend together. I'm such a sarcastic dick most of the time.
Content. Yeah. It's the content is contenting.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
Really? I don't want to say good.
As the people listen to this on Thursday,
yeah,
we record on Mondays. Oh, yep. Spoiler. We just gave it away.
I worked Fanatics Fest this weekend with iHeart, which was the...
Is that the porn star convention?
It was not the porn star convention. It's the first ever Fanatics...
The guys that DM the porn stars.
Yes.
Okay.
It was the guys that DM the porn stars convention. It was, it was a spectacle for sure. There's a lot of real pigs in this country, man. It's a thing to see. They were selling... So the WWE had this really big kiosk there.
Where Vince McMahon takes a shit on you?
No. But they did have a lot of wrestlers. They were really... The WWE crowd was like the big crowd there for the weekend. And they were selling...
Probably half the people thought, is this the Republican convention?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, that's kind of who's there. And they were selling these belts, like model belts. Mm-hmm. You want to take a guess at how much they were selling them for?
So like model championship belts?
Yeah, like fake championship belts.
These are psychopaths coming to this thing. They're getting to meet some of the wrestlers. Like you're,
yes.
Just like a t-shirt at a concert is like same triple sort of the cost of right. What you think. Don't say yet because my first thought is 150, but I'm going to go 250.
Way more.
Way more.
Way more.
500?
600.
Oh my God.
And you could get them kind of personalized. Like you
but
could
I
get
really
one
thought 250 was like, this should be about on the money.
$600 fucking.
$250 was I'm offering you a ripoff price.
Yeah.
At $250. $600.
Yes.
Sold out, I'm sure.
That I don't know. But we can't the like my producer, my EP, I like the minute I got there.
Well, this saw is somebody like Inception. The producer's producer?
The executive producer. Yeah. Shout out Jason English. He's a great guy. Runs a lot of the big stuff at iHeart, but he comes over to me.
Is he interested in producing this podcast?
He would hire me to produce it. Basically.
Oh man,
he staffs the shows, you know. But he, the first thing he said when I came over was just like, "Look at that belt, $600." It's you know what it is, man. It's just like those conventions, especially sports conventions like that. They are death traps for dads' wallets.
It's a suicide rap.
Yeah. Very
they
good, JL.
Were fucking dumb. Fanatics. Idiots like us. Baby, we were fucking dumb. Oh, that's a good Born to Run parody. Fuck off, Weird Al. I'm in the house.
Oh, boy.
See, I know just enough Bruce to be like, oh, Michael, I can slip a Bruce line in here.
Yeah, as soon as I said death trap, I was like, I can't believe he filled in the lines there.
You go to one Bruce concert and you're a disciple.
That's how it works.
I forced Laura to watch the extended editions of The Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Now, we watched Fellowship of the Ring last week.
Okay.
And she liked it, you know, not as much as obviously I do, but she did like it.
Yeah.
And the reason is Amazon has the second season of their Lord of the Rings show.
Which I hear is really bad.
I liked the first season, but caveat.
Yeah.
As I told people on my Patreon, I was high on opioids for the whole time because it was like one of the shows.
Shoulder?
Right. After shoulder surgery, it was one of the shows that I was like, so pacing wise, it was like the right pace for me.
Yeah.
But
sludge.
But I do want to rewatch the first season to be like, without opioids, do I like this show?
The fanboys I know did not like it.
I love the movies. I read the books, but I still don't consider I love the movies.
Yeah,
but I don't consider myself like a. And the series I thought started slow, but by the end of it, I was like, oh, I'm in.
Yeah,
that's all I remember. But like I said, I would take my medication like an hour before I sat down to watch it.
Yeah.
And it felt good.
Yeah.
So, but, this will be a test for Amazon.
So how long are the director's cuts? So the Two Towers has to be
Fellowship of the Ring is 3.5 hours. Two Towers is 340. Wow. And
Return of the King, 5.5.
Return of the King is 415.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Ugh. I saw Return of the King in the theaters.
Yeah.
And I kept theaters.
Yeah.
And I kept it was over.
Mr. Frodo. Sam.
I know they have to like wrap up everybody's story, but I was like halfway down the aisle because it would like it would fade to black and then pop up again. And then they're all of a sudden they're in the Shire.
Yeah.
Or they're, you know.
No, the Return of the King, I love all three, but the Return of the King is so blatantly like, dude, you put like four endings on the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And I get it. He probably obviously he loves the project. And it, yeah. I mean, I don't know how they did those in three of those movies and they released in 3 years.
I remember. Yeah.
It's insane.
And they're all excellent. I mean, the Return of the King, I do think is a little too long.
Yes.
But I mean, I got to be honest. Anytime I watch, I didn't get through Return of the King, but I watched the first two over the holidays and I like during that dead week between Christmas and New Year's. And I was just watching the second one and I was just like, it actually flew by. It was like, it moved faster than I remember because I knew it was long. But at the same time, I was just like, this just kicks ass. There's like an hour and change. It's so good.
The Two Towers, okay, everybody, if you're still watching or listening.
Hello, nerds.
Fellowship I saw in law school.
Yeah.
Like before it left the theater.
Yeah.
Even though I'd read the book, I was not in a hurry to see it. But it got the great critical buzz. Yeah. I went to see it and was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's
I
great.
Love this.
It's great.
But I waited literally. I think I had like exams or whatever. And then like just finally got to see it. And then so when I saw the previews for the Two Towers in like fall of 2002.
Yeah, dude.
And it ends with the Viggo Mortensen shot of him opening the doors. Yeah. And I was like,
oh, dude, it's so good.
And the Two Towers. You know, we're going to have to do just a movie list episode one day.
We have to.
All the things we've said.
Because we have to do your 20
greatest performances of all time.
The most ridiculous list.
Yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'll do it like Rolling Stone and number, would Steve Coogan in Hamlet 2 be my flea bag?
Yeah, your number two performance of all time that nobody saw coming.
It's Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Marlon Brando. Meryl Streep and Steve Coogan.
Yeah.
With Robert Downey Jr. rounding out the top five.
Of course.
But the Two Towers, after rewatching it now, Laura said her favorite was the third one.
And it is. I mean, they're all good.
Right. And the third one definitely won all the Oscars as sort of a collection.
Yeah.
You are being awarded. You are winning.
This is for three movies. Three of them. Yes. Right.
And I said to her when I told her that factoid, like an annoying fucking douche who's watching, you know, this won all the awards. Okay.
Yeah.
I said, as much as I'm down on Marvel post Endgame should have gotten the same treatment. Not that it maybe should have won. Endgame should have been nominated for Best Picture, and I think Best Director. I think the way they discriminate against comedy and horror, they also discriminate against action. Like Gladiator is the last time, but that had such an impeccable artistic credentials, Ridley Scott, Russell Crowe. He's coming off a Best Actor nomination for The Insider. He's done a lot of these critically acclaimed serious movies.
Who was also the old actor that died during the filming? It wasn't Richard. Was it Richard Harris?
No, but I don't think Richard Harris died. The guy who played the slave man, like the gladiator trainer, Oliver Reed.
That's it. Yes.
Passed away. So he was nominated for supporting actor for that. And it was just his picture. You never want that, kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You never want to be a picture on an awards show because it means you're not there or anywhere except in the warm embrace of the Lord's bosom.
Right.
But watching, so she liked the third one, but at the end of it, I was like, what'd you think? And she goes, I don't know if I can do a show. Because she was just like, I go, but it's so epic. And she said, it was epic, but she didn't mean it like I was swept away. She was like, it took an epic amount of my time.
Girls just don't get this stuff, man.
Yeah.
I had a girlfriend for a little bit that I was making watch the whole MCU, and she was not thrilled about it.
You do realize in 20 years that's going to be the next Me Too?
Making your girlfriend watch Iron Man?
Making women watch Marvel and Lord of the Rings movies?
She was like in on some, but not most of them.
I agreed to Fellowship of the Ring, and next thing I knew, I was watching the Return of the King Extended Edition, and I couldn't get up!
But I will say, man, it's funny because now in the nerd world, I get sucked into a lot of these rabbit holes on YouTube mm-hmm. where like film essays about like Marvel movies and shit. Mm-hmm. And they all compare them to the Lord of the Rings. And they're all basically like Lord of the Rings was the standard. Yep. They're like masterpieces of film, which they really are. Right. They're incredible. They're a lot more practical effects than people even realize. And you know what? They're so well directed. They're big moments.
Yes.
They are so good at getting you jazzed up for it. Like in The Return of the King, where Aragorn gets the sword of Gondor.
Yeah.
They will answer to the king of Gondor. And he just pulls the sword out. And it's just like, I'm ready to like fucking like get in there and mix it up with these guys, you know? Well,
I think we can do one movie list today after yeah. I'm done discussing this. But I give credit. The end game.
The culmination.
It deserved
yeah.
a real recognition, not just.
Did you cry?
Huh?
Did you cry in Endgame? I did.
No, you know what moment I found most powerful in the whole series? It was when Captain America in Infinity War is like
yeah.
holding off Thanos
yeah, yeah, yeah.
with all his goodness yes. and righteousness, and yeah. he gets fucking knocked out.
Of course.
But it's that slow motion moment
yeah.
where you're like, wow.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
even me, I'm like,
what a warrior.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I salute you.
Yeah, 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 totally.
So I was like impressed by yeah. Endgame, but I wasn't like, my childhood.
Yeah. No, like, I did. Yeah. That was me.
Did.
I was sitting in there. I was just like, it's 10 years. I waited for this for 10 years and it paid off.
But it's incredible. It's incredible. And I think it should have been rewarded. I think,
yeah.
you know, there's no reason. All due respect to James Cameron. There's no reason Avatar 1 is a landmark, but there's no reason Avatar 2 should get a Best Picture nomination and Endgame in its year should not.
Agreed. 100%.
Like, Avatar 1 is a sort of landmark movie in terms of visuals and epic, like what it's what James Cameron does. Avatar 2, impressive, dragged a little bit.
Well, let's be honest. The first one is Pocahontas. It's not like he reinvented. I mean, they reinvented the wheel with how like visually they told right. the story, but it's not like a groundbreaking story.
I just want to be jacked like that general when I'm 60.
Wow, that would be nice. Yeah,
that guy.
Yeah,
he's big into yoga. I remember I read something in the New York Times about him. Big into yoga. He used to be weights, and now he's, you know, that's when you know you're a real fit dude.
Yeah,
it's like, well, you know, I used to bench 400, but now I'm just about mobility and flexibility, but I still got my arm veins for a 70-year-old guy.
Keeps you fit.
But Two Towers is my favorite, and watching that movie, the battle scenes in that movie.
Oh, dude.
When they're in that movie, you are watching a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
A complete, this is not even like, oh, it's based in real life. No, it's completely.
Yeah.
And they're slowing it down, and you know they're going to get massacred at Helm's Deep.
Oh, dude.
And they're putting helmets on kids.
That is one of my favorite parts of the movie.
God.
Yeah. When he's looking around at like the fact that they don't have an army, basically,
like the king, and it's, dude, Théoden is looking around.
Oh my god! I mean, it just like it does set you up to be like, dude, this is gonna be a shit show. This whole thing, and then you start
and
the orcs are coming.
It. You're feeling the music. Humanity.
Bum, bum, bum. Oh,
and when bum, Saruman, bum, bum. When Grima and I'm sorry, everybody, we're gonna get to politics after the break, but hear me out. When Grima Wormtongue has come over to Saruman and he's going, we're going to go after. But you would need an army of thousands, tens of thousands. But there is no such army. Even Laura, when the like window opened, she went, oh.
It's so crazy.
Oh,
dude.
My.
Yeah.
Vroom,
yeah.
Vroom.
Yeah. It's and awesome.
Oh, to war.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. In the third one, it's a much bigger army. And of course, odds are against them.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like villagers hiding versus a huge army. It was like a small army versus a big army.
Yeah, yeah.
This was like, kids, we need your 10-year-old son to fight because we've got nothing.
Well, dude, and they set the stage so well that they basically have to hold out for Gandalf. So the whole thing is just like basically it's like, it's kind of like an hour-long great chase scene in a way, almost, where it's like, when you know the stakes are like they only have X amount of time to like break into the safe, or they only have X amount of time to like blah blah blah, it is that on like the grandest scale. It's really just like I almost think those movies are underrated for how good they are.
As an
adult watching them now, I understand them more than I did when I was like 13 or 14 when they came out. And
I
loved them as a kid.
I was like in law school watching them. You're in middle school.
Yeah, I got into them heavy because I don't really like fantasy stuff. But The Lord of the Rings, I just connected with it. And I think it's just because the movies are so fucking good.
Yeah.
You know,
it's and I'm glad she got through it. But at the end, I was a little, she could tell my tone. She almost wanted to pick a fight.
Yeah.
Why do I have to like it as much as you? Yeah. I was like, because I'm right.
Yeah. It's a masterpiece. What do you mean?
But the third one, it's like there is something with like Empire Strikes Back, I think is
the although best Star Wars by Star far. Wars,
I wouldn't say by far, because the first one I feel like has been underrated now.
Maybe. But Empire is
awesome.
Empire is one of the great movies of all time.
I think. And Dark Knight in the Batman trilogy.
The best
superhero
movie.
You know, unfortunately, The Godfather, it's still the first one that's by far the best. But Terminator 2.
Excellent.
And
Toy Story 2.
Worst Toy Story.
No.
All great. Worst Toy Story.
Toy Story 2?
Toy Story 2.
Get out of here.
But they're all great.
Yeah, okay.
But it's the worst one. But Two Towers to me.
Yeah, it's great.
That battle is...
How about I watch it when I go home?
I've seen that movie. I saw that movie twice in the theater. Then they released the extended version at like this big DC theater right near me. It was like the Uptown. If anybody listening knows DC, it closed, I think, but it was one screen so big it curved.
Yeah.
And it was like, they ran the extended versions there. I saw it once, I think the extended, but I'm watching this movie for like the 10th time. At 45 years old, and I am all in. Yeah. Like the camera work, to make me deeply give a shit about something that I am completely aware is fantasy, fake, whatever, is incredible. Everybody, hot take this week. Check out the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And as good as those are, I was ashamed of Peter Jackson for what he did with The Hobbit.
Well, yeah, I think the rumor is it wasn't supposed to be his trilogy. I think it was Guillermo del Toro. And then I think he dropped
have been
out.
A trilogy.
Yeah, it's also that trilogy. It's like that's the if they had done it 5 years earlier, maybe it's better. But it's too much green screen, too much CGI, too much. Like the first three are there's some of that, but it's a lot of practical. Like the orcs are makeup. Yeah. They're like big football players wearing all that shit.
Yeah.
So I mean, it just makes you feel like you're in it.
Oh yeah,
you know.
The Hobbit should have been. You know, The Hobbit was a 300-page book that they turned into an 8-hour three-movie series. It's insane. The book of The Hobbit, you're like 88% through the book after the first movie.
Is that right?
Yes. Like it's you like meet the dragon like at the end of the movie, and then it's like they kill the dragon like early in the second one.
Yeah,
and it's like okay, Hobbit. Oh, we have a movie 1.75 movies left.
Yeah,
you've added like other books and stories. Terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, that is Fantasy Corner, which you definitely didn't come for. But we're gonna talk DNC now. We're recording this before the DNC officially. The DNC has like started, I guess. But you know, the evening programs Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. By the time you hear this, if you listen quickly on Thursday morning, 3/4 of the DNC will be done. So I think we should make some predictions.
Yeah.
Some just talk it up. And then you can listen to this in oh, wow, what incredible insight and predictions. Or, oh, wow, the episode actually got worse after the Lord of the Rings talk.
I wanted to hear about Aragorn.
Yeah. Strider. But best trilogies of all time.
Okay.
Can you just name off the top of your head what you think the top five are?
Yours or what? Yours. I think the top
what you
three
think.
Are? Top five?
Yeah.
Because
I would say Lord of the Rings is number one. And I know that's a bold take because for me, I'll just give you mine to give you some time to think. Godfather?
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings. Christopher Nolan's Batman.
All time?
Yeah, for me. Okay. Star Wars, the original three. You know, Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi.
Okay. I guess you can count, yeah.
I guess the problem here is, like, I would have put something like Toy Story, but then they made a fourth.
Right.
Because I love the Toy Story movies.
I do, too.
So it's kind of, I guess I only have four. Like, I'd have to, those are the four that, like, come to mind, though. So I feel like those are the legit four because I'd have to like think about a fifth one. But to me, the tiebreaker, Nolan's is there because I think they're all really good. And The Dark Knight is like a top five favorite movie of mine.
Yeah.
So it lifts it up like a LeBron going to the finals with maybe not the best teammates in the category, but, sure. And Godfather, I think I would put it two because one and two are like in the top 5-10 movies all time.
Right.
But three.
Three kind of weighs it down.
Three stops it from being like a unanimous right. number one.
Yeah, because I actually had thoughts of on The Godfather for a second. I was just like, that third one is like. But also, I don't know. Maybe it's not as bad as I
watched it within the last 2 years. Terrible.
Yeah.
It gets worse. That's the thing about that movie. Unlike the movie Heat, which gets better every time I watch it because it's so densely and perfectly written that there's just a new thing some character does where I'm like, that's like 2 hours from now.
Yeah.
That like The Godfather, they released, you know, as one of those gimmicks, Coppola released over the pandemic or something.
Yeah,
The Coda. Worse.
Yeah.
Actually worse than what they released in the theater. And I was like, this is his real vision. Well, then he needs to stop because his fake vision was actually a little better than this.
Yeah.
That movie is terrible. And I can't believe I'm saying that because I was like a defender of it. I saw it when I was 11. Mm-hmm. So, of course, you're just like, oh, my God, The Godfather. It's The Godfather's back. It's terrible.
So the only changes I think I would make, I think Back to the Future would probably be in there. Again, the third movie kind of weighs it down a little bit.
I think two was hugely underrated. Like,
yeah, two's good.
One is amazing, yeah, but two is like really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And they go to the future, which is cool. Yeah. They go to the actual future.
Not back to the future.
Not back to the future. Yeah. Which actually the title makes no sense when you think about it. But, and then the other one that I was thinking about, again, third one kind of weighs it down. What about the Beverly Hills Cop movies? Because you can't count that Netflix thing that
I'm not. I think the problem with comedy is when you're late to a comedy, the things it might have inspired dilute your appreciation for the original.
Sure.
So like I saw Beverly Hills Cop and Beverly Hills Cop 2 when I was like a teenager. Like they came out when I was like 5 and 10 and I didn't see them till like 16 or 17. And by then you're kind of like, you know, Vacation.
So you don't like the Beverly Hills Cop?
No, I just remember thinking, I have like no real memory. I remember Beverly Hills Cop thinking it's pretty funny, but it's also leaning like, you know, as a kid, I'm like, yeah, the Bronson Pinchot character is hilarious.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I think the first two are, I think the second one's the best one.
Okay.
And I think that three is really bad. But I mean, I'm trying to think of other trilogies that even really. Oh, well, I mean, you could Indiana, but that's the thing. They made it. There's like five of them.
Yeah, the four and the,
you know,
the fifth I did not mind. I was shocked. But the fourth was one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, really bad.
And they should like I didn't go see the fifth one.
Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Yeah. But dude, so if you look at it as just those first three, Temple of Doom is also bad. I just watched it within the last couple months. It is not a good movie,
right?
Despite how good Spielberg is. Yeah. But like, there are just too many characters that make that movie annoying. And but the third one is awesome. Raiders is to me one of the all time greats. Yeah. You know,
I have a trilogy for you, and then we'll go to break.
Yeah.
But I would put Lord of the Rings because it's three elite movies. Like, in other words,
it's fair. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, it's hard to.
You can
say
argue
you're wrong.
That other trilogies have a better movie within them, but that Lord of the Rings is like
all three are good.
Yeah,
right.
All three best.
Because every trilogy we've just said, we've just been like, well, the third one kind of weighs it down.
Right.
But you don't feel that way about the first three Lord of the Rings. So yeah, I mean.
But I give you one other trilogy.
Yeah. Even Star Wars, the first three, the third one is like the worst out of the three.
I really liked Return of the Jedi. I really enjoy.
It's not a horrible movie, but it's not. I mean, you're talking
It's not a Godfather 3 or Beverly Hills Cop 3 drop off.
That's fair. Yeah, that's true.
But I'll give you one trilogy before we go to the break. And thank you for enduring this movie talk. If you enjoyed,
you love it.
If you enjoyed it, great. And if not, politics coming up. Okay. Forrest Gump, Philadelphia. Sixth Sense.
The Hanks trilogy?
Well, no. Sixth Sense.
Oh.
And this is based on a joke of mine.
Okay.
Which is Forrest Gump. He gets AIDS. and he has a son played by Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
So he moves to Philadelphia, gets his law degree so he can earn some money, dies of Jenny's AIDS. And then Haley Joel Osment, a few years later, can see dead people and meets Bruce Willis. Mm. And that is the Hanks Osment trilogy.
Meta.
Pretty good. I mean, those are three pretty good movies also.
Yeah.
So, you know.
They are.
That should be like a trilogy pack. The random trilogy pack they sell in like Target.
Yeah.
But that would be funny because it would be like,
how do you tie these together? Well, sit down.
It'd be like, actually, this for finally, it's not Clerks and Tim Burton's Batman in a two-pack.
Right.
Shakur. Anyway, that was a pun for Mike because I know he likes them. Anyway, we're coming back with Talk of the DNC, everybody. I hope you really enjoyed that fantasy movie inside discussion. We'll be back. And we're back, everybody. Mike, how was that break?
Fabulous. I mean, I'm on a high right now.
Yeah. Fantasy, not fantasy football.
Yeah.
By the way, new shirt, everybody. If you're watching, if you're checking in on YouTube, still haven't worn a repeat shirt on the show.
It's impressive.
For the year. This is my older nephew's school. And by the way, Center for Discovery, go donate if you can. It's a great place that helps special needs adolescents transition to adulthood. By the way,
love that.
Colin Farrell, my brother sent me this article on Colin Farrell, who has a son with who's 18 or 17 with like serious special needs. Mm-hmm. And he's starting like an organization for like programs for like transitioning to adulthood for special needs people. And I read the article and my brother has never been a Colin Farrell fan, really. Yeah. I remember he thought he was terrible in like Minority Report.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but he's great. He's grown into his like, once he stopped trying to be, this is what Hollywood sometimes does. Take it from me. Yeah. They try to make you a heartthrob when you're really a character actor.
Yeah.
You know, me, Brad Pitt, Colin Farrell, we roar for like, you're going to be an A-lister. It's like, but I'm more about the nuance of the craft.
Yeah.
But that's what happened with Brad Pitt also. He's too good looking not to be a superstar, but he thrives in like these quirky characters.
Yeah.
It's a curse we bear.
I know.
And Colin Farrell, I think, has really found his zone in the last like 10 years, like staying away from like the big budget stuff. Banshees of Inisherin was great.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
He was great in it.
Yeah. A weird movie, but like he's great. He's very good in it.
I really like, not as weird as some of his other weird ones, though. But this was, but Colin Farrell, then I watched, then my friend Chris Lambert, friend of the show, friend in real life, he sent me this like People interview that Colin Farrell did.
Yeah.
And it's like, I watched it and I was like, my goodness, like you feel yourself like falling in like platonic love with him because he's like, he's this, the way he conveys
a real good guy.
And it's not the hardest thing to be a good guy with your own child.
Sure.
You know, Michael Jordan, that's why Michael Jordan's great, because he wasn't probably a good father. You know, he was able to shut down those paternal instincts and be like, I'm about winning. My son will one day fuck my teammate's ex-wife.
Yeah.
But you're watching and you're just like, wow, this is incredible. So just as a plug, Center for Discovery is like a place like that. So if you're inclined to donate, this isn't like, hey guys, donate. They have big philanthropy drives and Robert De Niro was like the keynote speaker at their recent like gala or gala, you know, however you identify. But anyway, that's the t-shirt explanation. So new t-shirt next week, hopefully another new one, you know. Just the t-shirt update for a bit. Anyway, guys, the DNC.
What's going on? Yeah, DNC.
DNC, we got what it takes. Let the poppers pop and the breakers break. Ray Gunn, I am really feeling upbeat about politics right now. I think that Donald Trump is flailing. Mm-hmm. Like, the message is get out and vote. Get out and vote, donate, vote, get your friends to vote, talk to people, whatever. But I'm looking at the Republicans and especially Trump, and I'm like, it feels like they're going to need like another assassination attempt to get some momentum back. Like, first of all, that to me is the funniest thing. Donald Trump you're so fucking unlikable. Sorry, let's for an edit for a clip. Let's Donald Trump, you're so unlikable. You almost got assassinated, and America got over that in like 3 weeks. Like the momentum that you were feeling, you know, look at what happened with when JFK got assassinated. Lyndon Johnson became president, and they were like, everybody was just like, I mean, Kennedy got assassinated. We got to do civil rights.
Yeah.
Like, even though I'm a racist Southerner, I'm going to vote with my party because, like, Kennedy got killed. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to give the black stuff. Yeah. Whereas Trump.
And we'll never give it to him again.
Yeah. And then we're going to spend 40 years one trying time, to take it away.
One time, give him the right to vote.
Right. And then 60 years since Civil Rights Act was passed.
Yeah.
And but with Trump, it's like he got like, he squandered his goodwill by the end of the next week. He was giving his typical bullshit speech at the at the RNC.
Right.
You know, that's so nasty and we're going to win. And they hate our country. They hate our country. It was 1 week. He survived an assassination attempt. You know how bad a person you need to be like, how long do you think? It's like Brewster's Millions.
Yeah.
It's like if you spend $30 million in 30 days, you get $300 million. Trump was like, how long do I have to squander the goodwill from being almost assassinated? 3 months? I'll do it in 6 days. I mean, so, and now he's been flailing because, and I said this on my friend Pete's podcast, but Kamala Harris represents, you know, almost a thing that doesn't work in his program. Like, black woman beating my ass.
Yeah.
That's impossible because, as I know, they're inferior to me.
Well, and the thing that I've noticed since she's become the candidate, I guess not officially yet until whatever, the end, what, Thursday, Wednesday?
She did get that, but they did do some sort of like,
she's a candidate.
Yeah, yeah, she is. Right.
Of course. I guess what you're saying. But. When the switch happened, and he was at that, black women's conference.
Black journalists.
Black journalists. Yeah. Right. And he
National Association of Blowjobs. What the hell are you all doing here?
He just had that catastrophic clip that was just like, I don't even know if she's black.
Oh no.
She might not be black.
And per our, I think, we talked about racist accents last week, and Trump is so racist. He was veering into the blacks, as he usually says, wasn't racist enough. He was veering into South African. He was going, and she's black. He was almost going to say black. He was so close to just going, but he was like, she's Indian. Now she's black.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like saying, and it was like this new pronunciation, I think, dripping with racism or something.
Because that's what I was going to say. He can't actually, on the things that he usually goes after people on, I guess, I'm thinking about it now, he hasn't had any black people to go after. Directly.
Right.
And he can't do it without outwardly being racist.
Well, I said we're on the N-word watch.
Right.
Like, I think before this election, before the election day, I have this feeling that that perfect storm of I keep declining mentally and I keep getting angrier at losing to a black woman. And that's when you hit the N-word singularity.
Yeah.
Look at her. Look at her. She's at, there it is, September 10th, 2024. But yeah, I don't think it computes for him.
Right.
What's going on. And it's kind of funny to see him like malfunctioning.
You can go after Hillary. There's like, there's years of mistrust with the Clintons. You can call, and people just don't like women in general or whatever.
But amen, brother.
It's, it is kind of this perfect storm of like, they haven't really tried this yet. And it doesn't seem like he really knows how to defend against it, you know?
And my theory, and she's not, and it's like, it's like to him, it's like, well, put out your policies.
Yeah.
And remind people, you can't.
Right.
Because you don't have any substance.
Right.
And this is, and my theory on this, and I said this, I said it to somebody recently, but I said, oh, my sister-in-law, who is a member of the NABJ.
Okay.
Is my brother.
There you go.
And as I joke,
was she there?
No.
Okay.
No, but they actually were going to be.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I didn't ask them what they thought of it. I didn't want to put that, like, my brother is very
neutral.
Like,
they got to be neutral.
Well, my brother is like the most objective. Like, my brother is like an old school journalist the way I'm an old school comedian.
Uh-huh.
and with
out of work.
No, editor at the New York, at the family New York Times.
I'm kidding.
But he, like, he would never be one of these like journalism, especially sports journalism, which has become a joke.
Yeah,
there's real sports journalists, and then there's like, and then you look, and it's like. Buffoons like Stephen A. Smith are richer than some athletes.
Yeah.
It's absurd. It's infotainment. Sure. But it's like, anyway. But I was going to say, what I was thinking was, as much as people make a big deal of Kamala Harris being like two groups of like, she's black and a woman, and that's like a double strike against her in some respects in this society. My theory is that it will help her. It, being black will help her in terms of Hillary Clinton's a white lady.
Yeah.
So naked, raw, visceral misogyny was okay.
Right.
And I have said misogyny is like a PG-13 crime in America. Racism is an R.
Right.
And so people are much more tolerant of out. You could call Hillary Clinton the C word and it wouldn't be as bad as saying something like outwardly negative about black people.
Yeah.
In this society's logic.
Easily.
So I feel like what Kamala Harris says, she's, forget the Republican, forget MAGA.
Yeah.
But in terms of that population that doesn't want to seem racist, that little slice of the population, it's like, I could go either way, but it's Kamala Harris is like, well, if she were a white lady, I could be like that bitch. Yes. She doesn't know what she's doing. But if I call a black woman a bitch, I'm going into the subconscious of some Americans.
I think you're right.
If I call this black woman a bitch, that might be confused not as wholesome American misogyny, but as racism. And even racists don't want to be called racist.
Yeah.
There's very few racists who are like, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Even racists, like Donald Trump gets up there, says racist things, and then goes, I'm actually the least... I'm the least racist person.
Are you sure about that?
I'm actually the least. No. I've done more for black people than Africa. They call me, my nickname in the hood is We Are the World because I raise so much money for Africa. Okay? I do a lot more than you. So we're doing blacks. We're doing blacks. She's black. She's black. Is she Indian? Is she black?
The
way he said black, that should have been disqualifying. It was like he was almost saying bleh.
Yeah.
Like he was just bleh.
Yeah.
We're going to get to the DNC in specifics because I just want to go through the week and see how we land on predictions.
Sure.
Biden, alive by the end of the week or dead? You decide. But it's Donald Trump. Like the fact that whenever I hear somebody go, well, the voters need to be introduced to Kamala Harris. They need to know who is she? What is she? She's not Donald Trump.
Right.
And I'm sorry. That is good enough. And it's like Donald Trump being if not being Donald Trump is not good enough, if that alone isn't good enough, then Donald Trump being Donald Trump should be good enough to not vote for him.
Yeah.
Like, fine, I'll show you my policies, but we're all in agreement, right? You vote for this guy, you're awful.
Well, I think that's what happened. I was going through old clips of our show, and there was the clip where we were discussing, I had said...
When Mike is home alone, he likes to take a victory lap on all his Joe Biden calls.
I know. I was just going through our inventory because we have to get our stuff on TikTok. That's a different conversation. But there was a conversation that we had after Iowa where he like swept the caucus, and I was just like, nobody's going to beat him. Right. Biden's not going to beat him. And I definitely felt that way at the time and felt that way right up until, you know, somebody tried to shoot Trump. But I do think that after the Harris switch, like I said, I think there is a new energy around her as a candidate. And I think I'm not trying to discredit her by saying this, but I really do think that it's just because it's not Biden being that old and it's not Trump. Like, you finally have a third option that's like, all right, well, this is better than the other two options I had, so fuck it.
Yeah.
I have no reason not to vote for her, you know?
Yeah, it's
and people seem to love Waltz also.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
I like Tim Waltz.
Yeah. So there you go.
No, and I think I said when she introduced him as her VP, the look on her face as he was speaking, because that dude has real comedian delivery.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, I'm a good speaker. Obama is a great speaker who delivers a joke.
Yeah. That's
been, Tim Walz, it felt like he was workshopping his material was good at it.
Yeah.
Because she was looking at him like, oh, wow. I knew when I drafted Tim Walz, I had a future franchise cornerstone. I didn't know I had somebody this good, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, J.D. Vance is like unrelatable. And, you know, just the way people use that against other people, J.D. Vance, you can't sell that guy. You're selling him on like he's Appalachia, however you pronounce it. But he doesn't he comes off like cold tech CEO trying to be like your neighbor.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think he spent so much time trying to brand himself as Mr. Silicon Valley libertarian guy that now he can't just undo that and be like, hey, y'all.
Yeah, yeah.
And Trump is a disaster.
Right.
But he's always been a disaster. It's so funny. And it's like he's Kamala Harris's best weapon. She's nice looking. She's a breath of fresh air. It's somebody new. I hope Joe Biden gets the respect he deserves. And when she wins, I think people will realize, even if it wasn't intentional, him leaving late was good.
I know. I never thought I'd live to say it. But.
Because I think I'm a Biden guy, but I'm not going to give him credit here. I think it was a tough decision for him and he did the right thing, but it was tough. And not saying it was tough for outside observers, but for him, it was understandably extremely tough. And I think when they look back, it may have not been done intentional, but the attention span of this country, the way people focus, you don't want to give Kamala Harris a year because then the enthusiasm naturally fades. And right now she's got the convention this week. That's going to give another bump. Then the big moment is the debate. She's not going to go have a debate like Biden.
Yeah.
But she's got to crush it because it's got to become like, oh, the idea has to be Republicans are fucked.
Yeah.
Not, hey, we've got a race. By then it's got to be Trump rambling and saying bad things and her being calm, cool, and presidential. And then I think it's just get out and vote and win it.
Yeah.
And he'll be the first person, I think, in American history to lose three popular votes. I look for two impeachments, three popular vote losses, and 34 guilty verdicts and a partridge in a pear tree. So the DNC this week, everybody, and you're probably going, I can't believe he's talking about the DNC after Biden collapsed Monday night. But we don't know that right now. Bill Clinton had a stroke on Wednesday night.
Anything could happen.
Mike didn't even think to edit it out. Hillary Clinton, the whole crowd chanted the C word at her.
Yeah.
And we're not leading with that.
Yeah.
But tonight is Biden and Hillary. This is the night for the diehard loyal Democrats.
Yeah.
The ones who brook no dissent when it comes to Hillary or Joe.
Your father's Democratic Party.
My mom. These are my mom's people.
Yeah.
I was an enthusiastic voter for both. But we got Biden and Hillary tonight. Now, Hillary, I feel like when Trump loses to Kamala, I feel like Trump is going to put something out on Truth Social. We'll find out. You know, you'll all know whether he did. I think he's such a little shit. And he's a bitch. I realize I have a tweet in my drafts where I was just like, Trump is a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. I mean that not in any kind of feminine. I mean, he is literally a whiny, pouty, bitter bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
But I could get, I feel like after Hillary Clinton's speech, he's going to go, win or lose, I'm just glad I kept Hillary out of the White House. Like thinking if I can make her feel bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I get
a win.
That's
a still win. Yeah, right.
Right?
That's what I would do.
But I still believe that Hillary Clinton losing to Trump is much more a stain on our country than it is on her political skills. Mm. I don't care how unlikable you think Hillary is or how few times she went to those fat fucks in Wisconsin. You put Trump in charge. You altered this country for the worse for decades.
Yeah.
But That said, I think Hillary is going to show this is a redemption moment for her in many ways, because 2020 didn't have a convention. So this is her chance, just like it's Biden's swan song in a way. And he didn't have a convention in 2020. It was all right. Virtual. It's Sarah Cooper doing videos with Hillary Clinton. Anyway.
It's just such a nerve.
Well, all I'm saying is Sarah Cooper lip-synced so Hawk Tua could get an agent, so Ray Gunn could ruin the Olympics. That's my holy trinity of talent.
Anyway.
Don't make a clip out of that, for God's sakes.
I won't.
Thank you. I never have to tell you twice.
Yeah.
But I think this is a moment for Hillary to write her political farewell as well.
Sure.
She's looking at someone else becoming the first woman president. Hillary Clinton occupies a space in history. She's the first woman to ever win the popular vote for president. She's the first major party nominee that was a woman, but she's not going to be the first.
Yeah.
And I feel like she's come to grips with that, as tough as that probably is and was. But this is a chance for her to graciously pass the mantle of sort of political female leadership from her, and obviously Nancy Pelosi in another way,
yeah,
to Kamala Harris, who's going to become the most, I hope, most powerful woman in American history.
Yeah.
Superseding kind of those two women, Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. And in a way, as vice president, she kind of already is in some, maybe not culturally, but as a ranking, she is. So I look for a good Hillary Clinton speech tonight, and something very gracious, because she knows this is her. She can rewrite how people think of her a little bit and pass the torch.
Is there a
the tampon?
Is there a prop bet for whether or not Hillary will have an aneurysm tonight as she endorses another woman for president?
No, it's just going to be, and I'm sorry, ladies, I got to say it. This is a safe space. You know where my politics are. Boy, oh boy. Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton giving back-to-back speeches would be rough.
Yeah.
Monotone followed by,
Yeah.
I want this. I had to. We've got to give the bros something. We got to give the bros something.
Yeah.
No, but obviously, talk. I don't give a shit about that. And I don't think, I think she has to have her eye on history. She is a historical figure.
Yeah.
And I think she knows this is her, a gracious, robust endorsement, a passing of the torch without actually saying I'm passing the torch, because then that's self-aggrandizing.
Yeah, sure.
Is a great moment. And all, yes, Republicans and haters will be like, you know, she's boiling inside. And to me, it's like, I don't think she is, because Trump made her case. The Trump presidency was the validation. Hillary Clinton, she was never going to be president. But that's the validation. Like, America, are you happy with Jill Stein? With your Jill Stein vote? I'm fine. I'm rich and super smart and waxed this dude in three debates.
Yeah.
You wanted Jill Stein or Trump. Are you happy?
Gary Johnson.
How are you?
Yeah.
How are you? Is that a good choice? So I think she's going to have a good moment. And then it's Biden. And I know you're the Biden whisperer. So what do you foresee in his speech?
Boy, what do I foresee in his speech?
He might as well just go get on some Logan Paul Prime beverages, just get out there jacked up.
I mean, I would assume the speech is going to highlight the difficulty he had in making the decision to step down.
Okay.
How does that not? He hasn't talked about that too much, right? He had one address to the nation. Yeah, I mean, I would think that that's like the theater of the evening, right?
I'm
stepping aside because Kamala Harris is the only person that can do the job.
Hey, man.
Blah, blah, blah.
Hey, man. I worked with her.
Yeah, right.
I'm not kidding. I saw what she can do. There's nothing she can't do. This vice president, this might be the best vice president I could have ever asked for. And we're going to do it. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
Nothing America can't do.
Yeah.
With Kokomo Harris. Aruba, Jamaica. I'm not kidding. I want to take you. But it's, I think what I've heard is that it's a forward-looking speech.
Okay.
So he may acknowledge, he has to acknowledge, like, it was a tough decision. I'm not going to lie. But I, you know, but I think what he's going to try to do is he realizes, much like Hillary Clinton, her legacy is set. Biden's, she can just put a nice cherry on top of whatever you think of her. This is a chance to have her big final statement before she, before Kamala Harris becomes the most powerful woman in, you know, the country's history. Biden, and they were saying this on the news, this isn't like my original thought, but it's like, if she loses, a lot of revisionist history are going to come back and be like, oh, well, Bob, it's Biden's fault. They should have an open primary, which I find hard to believe at this point, because if you see the enthusiasm, the energy, the donations, the voter registration, what would be better? What could have been better? Giving Trump a year to prep for someone else? Yeah, younger,
sure,
more talented, but more time to turn Gavin Newsom into a fucking handsome caricature, or do all your dirt on Kamala Harris or Pete Buttigieg or whoever. I don't think, as much as people will want to blame Biden, looking at the results of how this has turned out, I don't think that would be fair. It's turned out better than anybody thought.
Yeah.
In terms of the thirst for new blood and new energy. But I think Biden knows that if Kamala Harris gets elected, it is a little bit of a validation for him. And it's a nice, see, you did the right thing. You may have beaten Trump in your mind, but at least you don't have to say we lost.
Yeah.
You know, and that's your VP. And you gave her the stamp to clear out everybody when you endorsed her. So I think his speech, he's just never been a great speaker. You know what I mean? So it's like,
Yeah.
Even if he has a good speech, I just think the moment will be very powerful.
Yeah.
You know, because it is history.
Yeah.
And he deserves, from both haters and fans within the Democratic Party, either an applause for what he's done or an applause for stepping down. But either way, you should be applauding, because, you know, it's not easy. And of course, your people, Mike, will probably be booing throughout the speech, trying to interrupt a historic moment.
Maybe.
Yeah. Hey, man, shut the fuck up. I'm going to send baby more bombs if you keep this shit up, Jack.
Thank you, Joseph Biden.
My baritone attempt as Bibi Netanyahu.
We will finish the job faster.
If you keep insulting me, I will murder more people.
He's awful.
Yep.
That's
bad guy.
But and just as a sidebar, I posted something, my first Israel, Palestine, Gaza tweet.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And it got a lot of good response.
Hello, Ronnie.
I said, the one thing I would never do, to be fair, is babysit for an Israeli family. that's a joke.
Such an inside
that
joke.
That is a very inside joke. Yeah. Right? It's not true. If they pay well, I'll babysit anybody's kids.
Yeah.
But I wrote that, hey, can't Biden or Harris and or Harris say, we stand with Israel, longtime ally, democracy in the Middle East, but we don't stand with Bibi Netanyahu. In other words, he was going to be charged with corruption before this election, and he has made a bed with basically, this is not controversial to say, those guys are like terrorists, those far right dudes, Smotrich and Ben Gavir. These are like terrorist dudes.
Yeah.
And they're bad.
I think there is an expectation that Kamala Harris might feel that way.
No, and I hope she does, because
I'm pretty sure she boycotted the Netanyahu UN speech.
Yeah, she said she had something else to do. But no, that him speaking, he's, you know, they'll invite him to, the Republicans will invite him to speak more than they'll invite the president of the United States to speak.
Yeah.
But I think, and I wrote that and I was like, so can't we say, hey, we, first of all, a different leader would almost certainly, you know, come to the table for a ceasefire. His own security people, like IDF leaders, are like, he's squandering the ceasefire deal.
Yeah.
Like, he's adding terms. And I say to people people on my timeline, I'm like, can I be with the IDF as far as a peace plan? Am I still too like anti-Israel? If I'm like, I'm going to stick with the IDF guys who are saying Netanyahu's fucking this up. So I said, wouldn't that be a kind of, hey, Israel, we've got your back. We've had your back, to the chagrin of many of our own,
the entire world. Yes.
Yeah. But we can't stand with this dude. I mean, we don't think he's an actor. He's an actor in good faith.
Yeah.
And given all that I just said, can't we say that? Wouldn't that be a way to sort of placate and really make a statement to some of the people on the left? You're never going to be like, you know, well, Israel, we don't recognize your existence.
Oh, of course. Right.
But that's a real step away. And you pin it on a bad actor, a guy who was a bad actor before October 7th.
Yeah.
He made this deal with this far right to stay in power before, and this was pre-October 7th.
Yeah.
And then so the comments I got, mostly supportive, but then I loved two of them. One said I was offering a blood libel by suggesting that people are only defending Israel for Netanyahu's ego. And I said, well, that's not what I said.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone else basically wrote, Israel has forfeited its right to exist. And I was like, okay, thanks, everybody, putting Twitter away for a while. And this is the problem with that. And we'll get back to the DNC.
But this is
the problem with that issue is like, I said what I thought. I actually came up with like I'm left of center.
Yeah.
But I thought I came up with a place which is like, you know, I see both sides and I think it has tipped distinctively against one side and their actions. And I'm offering what I think is a pretty sound idea, which is we stand with Israel, but this guy's out of control. And you know he's out of control because you were going to fucking prosecute him for corruption.
Yeah.
You know, and the IDF is saying he's fucking up the ceasefire. So like we're in good standing. And that got, you know, either I'm Hitler.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm, you know, going into a mosque and murdering everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so good. Right. Anyway, Tuesday. Oh, and Monday tonight is called For the People.
Okay.
And that's a little prosecutor slang because, as Kamala Harris said when she announced her candidacy in 2020, I will say what I said as a prosecutor in the court. Kamala Harris, for the people. So okay. For the people is a hearkening to her.
Yeah.
It's that's a theme of the Democrats, but it's also a little wordplay. I know how much you like that.
Yeah.
So For the People's tonight, tomorrow, Tuesday, is Bold Vision for the Future. And the big speakers that I see are Obama and Pritzker. So
Obama's coming, huh?
It's Illinois. It's an Illinois themed night since it's in Chicago. Pritzker is the governor of Illinois.
Yeah.
And Obama was, I believe, a
executive producer of
community organizer.
Oh, got it. Okay.
And now I think he works for Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's in content development at Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
As well as Spotify.
Yeah. Fucking guy.
Was he at Fanatics?
He might have been there, but like behind the scenes. I'm sure him and Michael Rubin are friends. Yeah.
Bold Vision for the Future. I think that'll be a good one. I mean, I'm a Democrat. I'm going to enjoy this, but I'm upset that there's no Vivek Ramaswamy because he's my favorite. He's my favorite Republican right now.
Yeah,
he's such a movie villain.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. I enjoy him as a total like trash TV kind of thing.
I agree.
But Bold Vision for the Future, I assume, will not involve anything with Israel. Just to bring that back.
I mean, it would be something if you had Barack talking about Israel, right?
Yeah. But I think what they've recalibrated, because they're smarter than the Republicans, they actually can do it. Like Trump was going to be kinder, gentler Trump after being, of course not.
Yeah, right.
But I think the Democrats really did shift. Under Biden, it was going to be a convention heavily on the threat of Trump.
Yeah.
But now I think they're really going to go with an actual positive message.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't know what Kamala...
Smart.
Yeah. So I don't know what Obama will say. I don't know what Pritzker will say, but I'm sure it'll be good. And my question for you is also...
And watch my crowd work special, October 17th, only on Netflix.
It's the second crowd work they've ever done. I've partnered with Matt Rife. We're going to do a podcast called Hot Dudes Doing Comedy. But I want to know, do you think, and I hate that this matters, but I think I would love it if it happened, like a Beyonce Taylor Swift dual appearance / endorsement of Kamala Harris?
I think that, I mean, I think as...
a vision for the future. You get those young people, get them showing up with Obama on stage doing a podcast.
As much as it makes me somewhat cringe,
yeah,
I do think it would be kind of sick. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty fucking cool for that to happen.
But both, like, to me, it's
together.
Like both of them.
Yes, together on stage.
Amazing.
Yes. I do think that would actually be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
I got to be honest.
And then Republicans get what they want because, like, they've been predicting it and they're like, but they brought out bullshit stars. They're just mad they don't have good stars.
Right, right. They have Hulk Hogan.
I am hoping, and people know this is being recorded before, I am hoping, because if she endorsed Biden, Taylor Swift endorsed Biden in 2020.
Yes.
Now it's a chance to be, you know how Taylor Swift, she loves, hey, are gays hot this year? Okay,
yeah.
Lady friends, you're not coming to the Grammys this year. I'm going with my crew of eight gays.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So like this, Beyonce already has like loaned her music to the, you know, to the cause. So like she's, as it would be cool, but it's not going to be as big a surprise. But I think you show Beyonce the respect she deserves by having them come out as pop culture equals and icons, not like seeding a hierarchy. But if they came out together and both endorsed Biden, Harris.
Yeah.
And I feel like Taylor Swift would want to be, it's like, oh, I have to endorse the first black woman who's running for president. Like who's got the nomination.
That'd be very demure.
First one running. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Did you get that or did that go right over your head?
Demure?
That's a TikTok thing. Forget it.
Oh, it is?
Because it's very of the now.
Oh, okay.
Know, whatever. Anyway, move on.
I'm on MySpace. but that's my big prediction. And I have no intel on this, but I am thinking there will be a Beyonce Taylor Swift joint. And I feel like bold vision for the future would be the night to do that.
That has been somewhat speculated. Is that fair? There's no real sourcing that says it's going to happen.
I think
happen,
it's just been speculated because
it would be cool.
It would be awesome.
Yeah. Right. All right. So nothing. It could happen or it could absolutely not happen. But I think it's going to happen.
I think. I mean, Taylor, it's we haven't talked about you for at least a week. Oh, by the way, do you want to share your Taylor Swift impression? Which I did actually enjoy.
Yeah. She used to sing, you know, hey, Steven, but you got me believing. But now she's singing this. All she sings is this. All her songs are this.
Oh, you on Mike's show, Mike Coscarelli Rules. I recommend this. The last episode, last week's episode.
Thank you.
I was very much enjoying it. It's a lot of music talk.
Yeah.
So if you weren't bored by fantasy talk or you want to pivot to music, it was very good. And you guys really had some harsh words for Jack Antonoff.
Oh, just the scum of the earth. Not because he's actually a bad guy, but he's shaped pop music in such a horrible way. But,
and he's kind of the Trump of pop music
in a way.
But what I Jack Antonoff was in the band Fun, which you guys talked about, and
I
couldn't believe it. You said you went to their concert and were like blown away.
Yeah,
by how you did not expect them to be as good as they were, and they disappeared. It was like Antonoff left.
He left. Yeah, it's his fault.
But that band, I had a joke on my album Keep My Enemies Closer. The first joke of the album was called Lena Dunham.
Yeah,
and it was a 5-minute bit on her. And one of the things I said, and this guy in the band Fun is, and it was Jack, I didn't realize it was Jack Antonoff. I was like,
well, he wasn't the big then.
He's dating Lena Dunham. And I was like, dude, you could date Lena Dunham if your band failed. This is a waste of rock star capital.
Yeah.
So I didn't realize I was talking about Jack Antonoff. I just knew I was talking about a guy from Fun.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think Tuesday is the night. If it's a future night, that's where you bring out Beyonce and Taylor Swift. And then you get those numbers 3 days later of like voter registration spiked in 12 different states. Wednesday is a fight for our freedom, which I believe they're going to actually bring out a Planned Parenthood employee to perform an abortion on stage.
Well, they take the babies out and they kill them on the table. It's very sad. That's my Trump. It's so awful.
Actually, no. Actually, so they're at the convention and they get on stage, and we don't even know if she's a nurse. She's dressed as a nurse, or she might be a stripper. And she gets, and the woman gives birth while Obama and Kamala stand there watching. And then Sleepy Joe brings a hammer over and bashes the baby, and everybody cheers. Everybody in the whole place cheers. It's a disgrace. But fight for our freedoms will be voter rights. I hope they come out with a strong platform saying what they should say. You know, you want, I think a court plan is necessary and good politics at this point.
Yeah.
Because it says we are addressing the things that you idiots don't realize are hurting us.
Yeah, yeah.
That you always go, do something. The do something. This is for the do something people. It's going to be about abortion. It's going to be about voting rights, I think. And I'm curious to see how they embrace the trans community. Because and they will, but I'm curious to see how robustly, because unfortunately, that is like the new desperate culture war for the Republicans.
Yeah.
Like when you're putting in your fucking acceptance speech, and we will make sure that men cannot play sports with girls.
Yeah.
When that's part of like your speech to America.
Yeah.
That's, you know, but they're, you know, I'm just curious because that's one of those issues. Just like, I hate to say it, to compare it to Israel. But it's one of those issues where it's like, guys, you know, we're with you, right? Mm-hmm. But can we not make a big deal of it right now? You know, we're with you. So can we not? But then that's I'm saying then that's insulting.
Yep.
So that you have to embrace it. And it's a basically on how robustly Bill Clinton is speaking that night. So a fight for our freedoms. I want the freedom to fuck who I want to fuck.
Oh boy, Bill.
Bill, good president. I mean, his deregulation of the financial sector, not good. But people forget he was dealing with a Republican Congress trying to get things done. Most jobs created ever, or at least since FDR.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
All right.
There's good there too.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I have to get this in before
ask you. Vince Foster what he thinks about Bill Clinton.
I am bringing three sexual assault victims of Bill Clinton to his wife's debate.
Fucking crazy. I can't believe he did that.
That's so vulgar.
I remember when that happened, I was just like, this guy's hardcore.
Well, and what I hated about it, to be honest, is whenever somebody would say, well, Hillary Clinton was trying to discredit the victims, I'm like, maybe she didn't think her husband was a rapist. Huh? But I'm sorry. Like a wife defending who doesn't have the facts. You ever get into a fight with a girlfriend where it's like you didn't even say like, and you're like, you were wrong. What does girlfriend? That ever work?
Yeah, right.
Why didn't you defend me? Yeah. Well, you did call the cashier a cunt.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah.
Are you my boy? Like you're my boyfriend. So like, why didn't you stick up for me?
Yeah.
Well, because you were horribly wrong.
Right.
That doesn't fly.
Yeah.
So why would your husband, who's president, be somebody that you'd go, well, I'm going to believe her.
Yeah.
No. But anyway.
All right, fair.
Wednesday. I don't know who else is speaking. I'm looking forward. I don't know who the keynote speaker is, but it's usually like an up and coming star like Obama was in 2004. I don't know if Buttigieg is too well known already to be like we're introducing you to Pete Buttigieg. Wes Moore, who I went to elementary school with, who's the governor of Maryland. I think he's somebody that they probably want to highlight. So I wouldn't be surprised. It's him. And then there's Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan. So there's,
right.
They are going to want to, I shouldn't say pimp, but you know, they're going to want to prop up and expose one of their super young up and coming, you know, 2028, 2032 candidates. And then Thursday is 4 Hour Future. And Koala Bear Harris is speaking that night.
Okay.
So hopefully it's a good speech.
Yeah.
Our woman.
You're right.
Wow.
Yeah, you're right.
Wow.
I didn't mean offense, but
I know
you
didn't. And that's what I meant with the, see that? That's why I think her race actually dilutes a little the misogyny.
Right.
Because if it was a white lady and you said, that's our girl, nobody would be like, hey, but if he's called black, you didn't mean it, but there's other people who have meant it.
Especially because it was enthusiastic support right. for her. But yes, no, I get it. Yeah, yeah.
That's the psychology I'm talking about that I think may actually work for her. So she'll accept the nomination Thursday. Protesters, I'm sure, will interrupt at least half the stuff. I hope.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, they'll get chanted down, actually. That's usually how it goes, unless they get violent.
Yeah.
They'll just be like, Joe, 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 Joe. And he'll go, who?
Yeah.
Oh, it's me, man. Come on. I'm running. Fuck it. Get out of here. Come on. I'm running.
Imagine.
My God, Biden's running. Oh, my God. Joe Biden's running. Just hits Doug Emhoff with a steel chair. Yeah. Oh, my God. He took out the second gentleman.
Oh, my God. Doug Emhoff is down.
And then Hillary and Barack come out like NWO.
And here comes Vince McMahon. It's the boss.
Anyway, let's cut this and we're going to go to Comedy Talk. But that's my prediction summary and I can't wait to see how it turns out.
Yeah.
I hope if I'm right on Beyonce and Taylor Swift alone, it'll be worth the listen on Thursday and beyond. But we'll see. So one more break and then we got a comedy special to talk about.
That's right.
Can't wait, Mike. We'll be back. And we're back, everybody. Mike, how was that second break? It felt like you needed that one.
Oh, my God. I needed that break so bad.
And most of my fans are like, why are they doing generic Southern accents? That's WWF / WWE announcers. Yeah. Jim Ross and Jerry the King.
Jerry the King. Yeah, yeah.
They were great.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were actually great.
Yeah.
Like, anyway. So no punchdown of the week this week. We're keeping it positive for the Democratic National Convention. But not too positive.
Right.
Because we've got a comedy special to discuss. And I decided, hey, look at this. It's on my front page in Netflix. It's top 10 trending TV shows. I watched Matt Rife, Lucid, his new special, and it's a crowd work special.
Yeah, our guy.
The first Netflix crowd work special ever, as Netflix said, and as Matt Rife told the crowd before the show.
I didn't know that.
Listen, Netflix has never done anything like this. And let me tell you something. The only people who talk with more of a ridiculous black scent than Matt Rife are young female WNBA white players. Mm. I don't know, y'all. Like what I'm listening to right now, I'm feeling it's like, okay, Becky, keep it moving.
Yeah.
But Matt Rife, it's a crowd work special. It was like 50 minutes, 49 minutes. One caveat. And a couple of comics mentioned this, and I thought the same thing, and it was confirmed by Todd Barry today. Todd Barry tweeted at Netflix or retweeted the Netflix tweet and said, I did my special, The Crowd Work Tour, was on Netflix in 2015.
Yeah.
So pretty disrespectful of Netflix to just act like, I mean, Todd Barry may not be, Sebastian Maniscalco, but he is in the comedy world, he has established himself firmly.
Yeah.
I mean, for years as a very good headlining comic.
Yeah.
Been in several movies. He is a top tier comic, not a superstar comic, but he is a top tier working comic.
Yeah, sure.
So to kind of just erase that is, you know, like I said before the show, I was like, Todd Barry can make that into a joke and it's funny. And I retweeted it, but underneath he's got to be steaming because it's like, what Todd Barry did, see now crowd work, everybody, if you don't know, has become the algorithmic shortcut. If you don't have a lot of material, some people don't want to burn material. What I say to those people is write more. That's what I do. I don't give out the C+ stuff. I just write more and more. But some people don't want to. And some people are good enough at it. A Stavros Halkias is a good example of his crowd work stuff is hilarious. Mm-hmm. So you're not giving me like B content just to satisfy an algorithm. I feel like I'm getting good comedy from you. But the crowd work thing has become the algorithm like, hey, what do you do? Hey, like you get interaction, you get camera cuts. It's not necessarily the greatest comedy. Now I've seen a Matt Rife clip and it was a long one, like 12 minutes or something that he did in, I want to say Iowa. But for all my critiques of Matt Rife, this was great. It was actually, I was like, this was really good, quick, long, held it for a long, like had this long conversation with this woman, took her phone. It was actually, and you know, I'm an asshole when it comes to this stuff. It was actually really good. So it's not that it can't be done. It's not that Matt Rife can't do this stuff well. You know, he's got over a decade of stage experience. Mm-hmm. Fine. This special is... I'm such a good comedy observer, Mike, because even when I'm not enjoying something, you can get me. I'm still open to the next laugh. I don't, after 15 minutes, go, well, I'm just going to write that this sucked and sit here with a sourpuss. If I'm going to watch it, if you give me a laugh in minute 18 after not making a laugh, you're going to get a laugh.
Yeah.
So he has these moments in the special that are funny. In my opinion, I think they are actually funny. But there is something about him that I genuinely don't like as a performer. It's the fake laughing. It's the acting. I can tell you're acting on stage. You're acting like, you know, first you give me like some sort of motivational speech, like everybody, I think everybody out there should follow their dreams. Okay. There's going to be people telling you not to do that. I think you need to follow it. Say, fuck the haters. Go. So you get this like, okay, whatever, dude.
Yeah.
You're 28 and you're a multimillionaire. Like you really didn't have fighting through open mics when you're in high school is not the same.
Yeah.
Being mid 40s and fighting through it, that takes fucking grit.
Yeah.
Being like 19 and be like, I'm going, it's cool. You can talk about how you were grinding.
Yeah.
It's cool to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not like, oh man. No, you're like, I'm hanging out with comics. I'm fucking, I can't even drink in this place.
Yeah.
Let's do it. And then you're on Wild and Out as like a young 20s. So like you've been fine. You've, you know, but anyway. So he has some good moments, but it's that, and he has like a fake laugh, and I can tell it's a fake laugh, and I hate that. Like people like it when I laugh on stage because it's earned. I look miserable for most of my set. When I laugh, it's such a release for a crowd because I don't just go, oh.
They know they're not in trouble anymore.
Right. They're like, oh, okay, so he is going to unlock the doors.
Yeah, right.
But I mean that in terms of I don't give people a fake laugh. I can't. Yeah. But if I laugh, it's genuine. I'm enjoying myself. He does a lot of fake laughing, a lot of acting on stage, which tells me that's the divide in comedy to me.
Yes.
It's I'm performing the role of stand-up comic tonight. I am Matt Rife, handsome actor, and the role tonight is stand-up comic in front of a bunch of white trash. And he was in Charlotte, and I don't know what club, it was the Comedy Zone or something. The trash was thick in there. There was a lot of white trash in that crowd. And like I said, I hate all the extra that he puts in, but that's the game. He's famous because he's one part handsome, one part competent comic with some good jokes, and one part actor pretending to be what people want from a comedian. And because of that, I say, and in the solidarity with Todd Barry, you know, who was ahead of the trend. Like that's, he just did that. Not because it was an algorithm trend. TikTok did not exist when Todd Barry did his crowd work special. He did it because he had developed a skill set and it was really funny. I remember that special. It was really funny. And now for him to be erased because, oh, he did it when he was doing it as an artist. We're more interested in algorithm chasing hacks. So on principle, I'm not a huge fan of this, but I can't tell you it's not without laughs, but it's not like particularly groundbreaking or particularly funny, but there are some laughs. So if you like to look at Matt Rife and don't want authenticity and are willing to settle for 5 to 6 laughs in 50 minutes, Lucid on Netflix is for you. That's it for me, Mike. I got here so early tonight that we made the mistake of squandering my very early arrival. We wasted that arrival energy on non-podcasting. Yeah. So now we're back where we always are. Evening has set in. Fatigue.
Yeah.
Edging into anger.
No. Not quite there yet.
All right. But. So everybody, if you're still listening, thank you. I got a lot of shows coming up. Newark, New Jersey, St. Paul, New York, Rutherford, New Jersey, Chicago, Hartford, Connecticut, Princeton, New Jersey, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and Emporia, Virginia. So if you're in northern North Carolina or southern Virginia, check out my calendar at jlcovan.com. Check out Half Blackface, my special on Amazon Prime. Give it a nice review if you haven't. I did get another review, thankfully.
Excellent.
Let's keep those coming. For housekeeping, Mike.
If you are a YouTube watcher, please leave a comment under this video. You guys have gotten really good at that. We really appreciate it. Some of you even leave more than one comment. That is fabulous. obviously you've seen, we get in the comments sometimes and talk it out with you guys. I think somebody mentioned they couldn't believe that we didn't like 42, the movie.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, we both were in there immediately and were just like, just very bad. So we do talk to you guys. So please feel free to leave a comment. And if you are a YouTube watcher, you can also take us on the road with you.
We've gotten a few, sorry to interrupt, but we have gotten a few new reviews finally on iTunes.
Love it. Love to hear that.
Keep that coming as well.
Yeah, so Apple Podcasts, Spotify, we are an audio product as well. You can listen to us there. And obviously, if you're listening to the audio version of this, why not take a peek at the YouTube, subscribe to JL's YouTube and watch the show, because you can see, you know, me in my pink shirt and JL in his orange shirt. And it's honestly, it's a little bit better for when we do bits like Vinny the Guinea, or anytime, you know, you do your Trump stuff, or Scott Pilley, you get to see it in action. And obviously, you know, listening to the impressions, only a half of it.
Yeah.
So
thank you, Mike. And of course, I like to say, Mike does great work here. Many of you are old fans of mine. Some of you are new, but the old fans basically uniformly believe that Mike has taken the raw talent that they always liked in me and
unlocked it,
given it more direction, more focus. So if you, the way to reward Mike, you know, you don't pay me money, and I'm not asking you to do that. But you don't have to pay Mike money here either. But what you can do is subscribe to his podcast, Mike Coscarelli Rules. Yeah. Like I said, there was a really good episode this week. And I don't agree with every episode. Some episodes I'm like, eh.
And you voiced that.
Yeah. and subscribe to, you know, if you're on YouTube watching our my show with Mike, go to Slickback Studios on YouTube and subscribe there. And you can give, hey, if you don't like them, so be it. But you can try and you can support the studio that has been so generous and good to me in making this a better show. So do that. Do what you can. And I will see you next Thursday.